There's Dave.
Hello, hello, hello. Ben Whitson.
Good morning and welcome to the California Coastal Commission meeting for Friday, June 12th. Could we please have the roll call?
Commissioner Berg. Commissioner Hueso. Here. Commissioner Cram. Here. Commissioner Mercurimi. Present. Commissioner Potter. Here. Commissioner Schellenberger. Here. Commissioner Wan. Here. Chair Neely.
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. And now we'll go to staff to go over any changes in the agenda and some announcements.
Good morning, commissioners. There are four changes to the agenda. On page 17, item 5A, which is appeal number A1-MEN-070-28, Jackson Group, that's been postponed. Also on page 17, item 6A, which is the permit amendment request of Reclamation District 768, that's moved to consent. On page 18, item 7A, which is the Port Master Plan Amendment for the Port of Los Angeles, that's been postponed. As well as on the same page, 18, item 8A, the consistency determination for the Corps of Engineers related to that has been postponed as well. And I'd like to just announce for benefit of people in the audience that if you'd like to speak to the commission, speaker slip and hand it to staff. The table also contains the addenda for today's items. And finally, if everyone could please turn your cell phones off or put them in a mode that won't disrupt the meeting. The moving then right into the North Coast portion of the agenda, which is everything. There are a few handouts that I distributed this morning. The items include an addendum for item 4A, the Crescent City LCP amendment, and then the pink addendum containing all the administrative approval items. For anyone in the audience, there, as I said before, there are more copies out on the table if you'd like to get one. And if one of the commissioners didn't get one, I have extras here. The pink addendum contains three permit waivers and two permit time extensions, and we're aware of no opposition or controversy involving these items and recommend that the commission concur with the executive director's determinations on these items.
All right. Thank you, staff. Excuse me. Is there any objection to concurrence with the determinations? Seeing none, the commission concurs.
Thank you. As I mentioned in the changes, there is one item we've moved to consent, which is the item originally scheduled as item 6A, the permit amendment request 1-03-4-A3 for the Reclamation District. For anyone who might be here on this item, this will be heard as part of the consent calendar, where the commission will consider whether to keep it on the consent calendar. Should the commission decide not to, it would revert to its regular place on the agenda. This project involves the installation of an approximately 300-foot-long sheet pile wall along a portion of the Mad River Slough just north of Humboldt Bay. The original project is approved, allows for standard methods of repair and maintenance using clean quarry rock and earth, but in this particular area there's a severe incident of erosion which requires the sheet pile wall. Staff is recommending modification and reattaching of several conditions from the original permit and adds a new special condition to ensure the project will avoid significant impacts to wetland and ESHA resources and ensure consistency with the Coastal Act. We're aware of no controversy, and we're recommending that upon the close of the hearing, you approve this with the conditions listed in the report.
All right. Thank you, staff. Are there any ex parte communications on the consent calendar item? Seeing none, what's the pleasure of the commission? We have a motion by Commissioner Potter, a second by Commissioner Hueso to approve the consent calendar. Is there any objection to a unanimous roll call vote on this item? Seeing none, the consent calendar is approved.
That brings us to item 4A, which is the City of Crescent City LCP Amendment, CRC MAJ-1-09, Costa Norte. And as submitted, this amendment proposes to revise the text of the land use plan, providing specific policies intended to guide types and densities of uses in the multifamily residential land use classification, which basically is designed to allow common wall residential development at greater than 6 units per acre development, allowing compatible visitor serving uses. The changes also include changing the zoning to implement that land use plan classification, and changing the text of the residential professional zoning district to modify the lot area per dwelling requirements to allow the greater density that's designed. As I mentioned, there is a handout, the staff addendum, which includes the certain changes that we're making to our suggested modifications, and it also includes a letter from one of the original or from one of the neighbors of the project and a letter from the city. I do have a PowerPoint presentation that I'll be going through as I address this item, and I'd ask that it be brought up now. Thank you. The proposed amendment follows an appeal filed with the commission of a City of Crescent City granted permit to Randy Baugh, who does business as Development Consultants, Inc., for the development of a 44-unit mixed-use residential and professional office complex known as Costa Norte. It's located at the former Del Norte Community Health Center at 2nd and A Streets. The commission found substantial issue on the appeal in March of 2008, and one of the issues raised was the compliance of the proposed land uses with the land use and zoning designations for the site. So after the commission found substantial issue, the city acted to amend the LCP provisions, which conflicted with the approved project, and the city's requested staff to schedule the de novo portion of the appeal after this LCP amendment is acted on by the commission. The subject property, as I mentioned, is the site of the former Del Norte Community Health Center, situated at 200 A Street. Project site I'm showing in the center of the photo. Just some orientation. This is 2nd Street running across east-west to the ocean. The site is adjacent to the Hampton Inn Hotel, which the commission approved about 5 years ago. The street running perpendicular to A Street, this is 2nd Street. A Street runs perpendicular to 2nd Street. The 1.24-acre site, as you can see, is immediately landward of the ocean. This general area is in the vicinity of the Battery Point Lighthouse, which is a significant landmark in Crescent City. The clinic building that you see here has been abandoned. The clinic has moved to another location in town. And the land uses in the vicinity, in addition to the hotel, you can see that there's primarily single-family residential development in the blocks surrounding. This is an aerial view of the same site. You can see the medical clinic. The property is an L-shaped piece that extends along A Street and down 2nd Street to the ocean. Although this LCP amendment is project-driven, we note, of course, that the certification of the amendment would permanently change the designations for this site, and it's appropriate for the commission to consider the range of uses, not just the specific Costa Norte project that could be developed here. And in addition to that, by changing some of the standards for the professional office, residential professional zone, it affects some additional sites in the area. That being said, to provide some context of this particular amendment, slide number 4 shows a site plan of the Costa Norte condominium project. The next two slides 5 and 6, show elevations of the project as it's in its current version. And to accommodate the development, the LCP would be amended in several ways. This shows the existing land use designation. The L shape that I'm pointing out would go from the existing medical-related land use classification and R2 land use classification to a multifamily residential land use designation. Similarly, in the zoning, Right now you have, in a small portion of the site, a residential designation and the medical professional classification. This would all be converted to the residential professional zoning designation, which actually implements the multifamily land use designation. And as I mentioned, the amendment also includes some text changes, basically to allow for greater density on the site. The staff is recommending that the commission, upon the conclusion of the hearing, certify the amendment with suggested modifications. In some respects, the amendment is consistent with the Coastal Act. The property is within an urban portion of the city with adequate municipal sewer, water, and other services able to accommodate it. Thus, it's consistent with the new development policies of the Coastal Act. The site is located, as you saw from the previous slides, on a waterfront site, which would be very suitable for visitor-serving uses. As you know, the Coastal Act policies 30222 and 30213 direct that development on such suitable sites be prioritized for visitor-serving commercial recreation facilities, especially lower-cost facilities. However, inherent in these mandates is the premise that such priority uses are indeed needed in that location because of a lack of such facilities elsewhere. In this case, as part of the LCP amendment, the city provided information about the accommodations that are available in the Crescent City area, and there is an abundance of rooms at relatively low cost. Citywide, there are some 788 rooms available with a best rate range of $80 to $96. The occupancy rate is only 43%. And in addition to that, the city owns a recreational vehicle park that accommodates 192 spaces. And so the determination of staff was that there was no compelling demand that would cause us to require that the site be reserved for visitor-serving uses. I should point out, however, that the LCP amendment would allow for visitor-serving uses. It just wouldn't mandate that they be there. And we believe that given the overall supply, that it is consistent with the Coastal Act to designate it in a way that does not mandate visitor-serving. With respect to other issues, the site is large enough that a development could be sited away from the marine intertidal wetland and possible on-site ESHA that exists. And so we think that in many respects, the project is consistent with the LCP amendment is consistent with the Coastal Act. Now, there are two principal issues, however, that are raised that do cause concern with the new land use and zoning designations, which are designed to accommodate a much denser development and bring more people down to the waterfront. And those concerns are tsunami wave run-up and sea level rise. Tsunamis are a concern for the entire California coast, but Crescent City seems to be a focal point for tsunamis. It's experienced tsunamis, damaging tsunamis in 1960, 1964, in 2006 even, and there were several fatalities from the 64 event. In fact, 11 people were killed. Following both the 1960 and 64 tsunamis, Orville Magoon went to Crescent City to map high water marks. And these slides that I'm showing, slides 9 through 14, are some of the slides that he took in 1964. And what they show, this gentleman here is pointing out the high water level on the buildings left by the marks on the buildings. And this just happens to be not the subject property, but the site adjacent. This is the old hospital site in the town that's now been replaced by the hotel, the Hampton Inn, shown here in slide 15. Again, more sites from the hospital site where the dapper gentleman is pointing out the water line. This particular slide, again, is near the hospital, but it's of use because this shows an alignment down 2nd Street, and the subject property for the Costa Norte project would be to the left, and you can see that the elevations are such that the ground actually slopes down partially into the Costa Norte site, and so even though we don't have photos of what happened there, it can be assumed that there was inundation to some level on the Costa Norte site. These are other slides. You can see our same gentleman pointing out the water level going up to the top of the window. And here's another high water mark, which was as you see, 20 and a half feet above mean lower low water. Slide 17 shows, slide 15 and 16 are aerials of the city taken just before and after the 64 tsunami. This is the before picture in slide 15. Slide 16 is the after event. And one thing that's interesting to note is in the center here, you can see a plume of smoke that's going. That actually is from a burn pile from where they piled up debris from the devastation to burn it. So this is within a few days after the tsunami. And if you were able to study this more closely, you'd see in comparing the two photos, devastation of many of the residential areas and the commercial downtown. In addition, you can, I need help. Could you bring it back? I'm sorry. About three slides. The other direction. One more, please. Okay. Elk Creek is shown in the center of this photo 16. It's a much wider channel. You can see evidence of much more deposition of material in the harbor. So it demonstrates that this area was very much affected by that 64 tsunami. The next slide, slide 17, if you can look closely, it shows plots of high water from the field investigations conducted by Mr. Magoon. The work that he did in 64 has helped to delineate inundation zones and evacuation routes for the city's tsunami preparedness plans, and also to help calibrate the numerical models that have been developed since that time of tsunami wave run-up. Since tsunamis are infrequent but potentially very destructive events, historic events are often only clues as to the possible damage from a tsunami, but often do not show the maximum credible event. For this location, numerical models have been used to project the run-up and inundation that are likely to occur with possible future events. This maximum credible inundation zone is shown in slide 18, which incidentally, the pinkish area is the inundation area that was observed from the 1960 tsunami. The lighter pink area around it is the inundation area from the 1964 tsunami. And then the fainter pink verging on white is the modeled wave run-up from the maximum credible event that would occur. This map was prepared by the Delnart County Office of Emergency Services to identify inundation areas and consider where evacuation should be conducted. The project, the subject property affected by the amendment is shown where the arrow is, essentially near Battery Point at the end of 2nd Street and about that location. The modeling that's been done, while it's a significant help over what previously existed, is really just the start. There are modeling efforts underway for the whole California coast that will eventually provide the commission and the public large with much better information. But this is the information that we have to go with right now. The major concern with a tsunami in Crescent City would be from a large earthquake of the Cascadia subduction zone, which is depicted in slide 19. This subduction zone is very comparable to the subduction zone off of Indonesia that gave rise to the tsunami of several years ago that caused such devastation. These are the two different subduction zones. The Cascadia subduction zone runs from Cape Mendocino in southern Humboldt all the way up into alongshore Vancouver Island. This is the subduction zone, the Sunda subduction zone off of Indonesia, where the earthquake that caused the tsunami several years ago was centered. The next slide, slide 21, shows a core sample that you actually may remember seeing back in 2005 when Leslie Ewing, your coastal engineer, gave a tsunami workshop. And the core sample was presented by Professor Lori Dengler from Humboldt State, who presented it as indications of large Cascadia subduction events giving rise to tsunamis. What you see in the core sample, these gray areas are layers of sand that are thought to be laid down during the tsunami events themselves. The core sample shows that going back in time with carbon-14 dating, et cetera, this area was resulting from the massive earthquake that they project occurred in 1700 and was a major Cascadia subduction zone event and deposited a large amount of sand. The gray areas further up show layers that were deposited from the 1960 and 1964 tsunamis. Coastal Act Section 30253 requires that risk to life and property in areas of high geologic and flood hazard be minimized. In the present wording of the LUP, although there is a policy that mirrors 30253 with respect to geologic hazards, there is nothing there currently that refers to protecting against and minimizing flood hazards with new development. So one of the suggested mods, the first suggested mod that the staff is recommending, is that the LUP policy number 3, which mirrors 30253, be supplemented to add flooding as one of the risk types to be minimized. That provides the basic mechanism for the City Commission on Appeal to address the flooding hazards that could occur. Education and preparedness are certainly important aspects of tsunami preparedness. People in the identified inundation zones will have often little time after the initial tsunami warning to evacuate to high ground, and they need to get as much warning as possible. Therefore, suggested mod number 3, which staff is recommending, would add a new policy to the LUP that would require that development in the inundation zone provide information on tsunami risk and evacuation options and require safety plans so that occupants of the building will know where to go to escape a tsunami event. Suggested mod number 2 would add a new policy also to the LUP that would require that new residential development resulting from subdivisions, including condominiums, that are located within historic and modeled tsunami inundation areas be designed and sited such that the floor area of those permanent residences are constructed at a height above the maximum tsunami run-up depth with an extra foot for a freeboard. In addition, the mod would require that all such development, the structures of all such development, be designed to withstand the hydrostatic and hydrodynamic loads and effects of buoyancy associated with inundation, with the idea that a tsunami may come in, it may cause some damage to lower parts of the structure, but it won't collapse, and with the floor area of the permanent residential above the tsunami wave run-up zone, presumably those units then would remain and could be used again. We're recommending that the Commission adopt this modification to provide, which does provide extra protection for permanent residences for a number of reasons. First, over the last half decade in the aftermath of the Indonesian tsunami, the Hurricane Katrina, Cyclone Nargis, there's been large-scale displacements of persons and homelessness resulting from the flooding, especially in low-lying coastal areas. And that's come to be recognized by governing bodies and international aid agencies alike as a form of disruption on a scale that's similar to pandemics and famines. Such disturbances can significantly destabilize the security and well-being of a whole population, region, or city. In addition, the consequences of the loss of one's personal home and residence are very significant. Primary residences are often the primary and most significant financial investment for most persons and offer a substantial portion of their intended retirement income from the equity that's often attained. In addition, the homelessness would result from the loss of a home would have its own devastating consequences. So these design requirements, they are a new step for the Commission. But in the coming months, the Commission will hear other North Coast projects that will have similar requirements for new development in identified tsunami inundation zones. And due to the historic damage that has actually occurred in Crescent City, we believe Crescent City has been a bellwether for dealing with tsunamis, and we think that Crescent City, which has been in the lead with regard to tsunami signs, as shown in slide 22, and warning sirens, that this is oddly an appropriate place for this first step of the commission to impose these new modifications. Yeah, as I mentioned, the other major concern is sea level rise. And staff is recommending that the LCP be modified in a way that would address sea level rise in a more proactive fashion as well. As you may remember from the staff discussion about climate change in December and hearings in April, the latest IPCC report did not consider the dynamic changes in ice melt when it did the most recent consensus-based projections of sea level rise. These sea level rise projections are the original IPCC projections are shown here in slide 23, and these are expected to be lower now that everyone is realizing that there are significant melts of ice caps that have greatly increased the projections of rates of sea level rise. This latest study that gave rise to the projections shown in slide 24 have been used by the Coastal Conservancy, the Delta Vision for the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta, and the Netherlands for planning purposes. The California Climate Action Team, the group in California that's undertaking or directing much of the local research on climate change, reviewed this work and in May issued a draft report that supports these projections. It even projects slightly higher possible increases in sea level, again based on the peer-reviewed IPCC future temperature scenarios. This study and the projection, projection of 4.6 feet of sea level rise that was the basis of the work of the Pacific Institute and Phil Williams and Associates, which was presented to you at the April workshop. That work resulted in slides 25 here and 26, which show likely areas of inundation in Crescent City and also erosion that would occur in 2100 with the rise of sea level. This slide shows inundation areas. Slide 26, the green are areas of increased erosion due to sea level rise. Since sea level rise can clearly have a significant impact on this part of the coast, we're recommending suggested mod number 4, which would add a new policy that would require projects to be analyzed for rising sea level. Since the future rise in sea level is uncertain, the approach that would be taken would be to use a range of sea level rise that mirror these projections from the IPCC reports, the other reports that I've been showing you, would require that the projects be designed to meet at a minimum the lower sea level rise. But at the same time, the analysis would take into account the higher levels of sea level rise, thus allowing applicants to be aware of possible future problems so possible adaptation can be incorporated into the initial design and approval of the project. For example, with knowledge of how much rise in sea level would affect the development might be modified to relocate the structure to sufficiently high ground to avoid the problems, might be designed in a manner to simply accommodate the higher sea level rise, or it could be designed in a manner that would allow the structure to be adapted in the future as higher inundation affects the site, for example, by having foundations that would allow for the structure to be raised or jacked up in the future, or plan for a shorter economic life of the structure with concurrent plans for the ultimate removal of the structure when the hazard reaches critical levels. The commission direction to staff after the April hearing was that you wanted a more rigorous examination of sea level rise in permits and LCPs, and staff has proposed suggested mod number 4 in response to this direction. Now, I should point out that the addendum contains some revisions to suggested modification number 4. The purpose of the revisions is to more closely match the range of sea level rise that should be considered in these project evaluations to more closely match the projected rates that I was discussing in the previous slides. And so this new language is in the addendum. Now, how would the application of these various modifications affect a project like Costa Norte or any other site? What it would require is that there be a site-specific analysis done to determine the height at which any permanent residential units would be built, what their lowest floor level would be. The analysis would have to take into account the projected general sea level rise as set forth in the suggested modification number 4, but also take into account offsetting natural factors, which are significant in Crescent City, where things such as tectonic uplift reduce the ultimate relative difference in sea level rise. And then in addition, it would need to account for the projected tsunami wave run-up at the given site. And taking all those factors together would yield a level that permanent residential should be built higher than. At this point, a site-specific analysis still needs to be done for the Costa Norte project. Our best educated guess at this point is that that level would be located somewhere between 6 to 11 feet above the current grade on the property. However, that's very preliminary, and the analysis would need to be done. I'll just show a couple more slides. The other issue I wanted to touch on with regard to the LCP amendment is with respect to our visual, we have suggested mod number 6, which would require that a view corridor be maintained with any new development that's developed. This slide, number 27, is a view looking towards the ocean down 2nd Street. The Costa Norte development is on the right at the end of the street. The Hampton Inn is to the left. The suggested modification would require that there be a view corridor, which on slide 28 shows it's a 20-foot corridor, and it shows the extent of it in that area. So in conclusion, staff is recommending that the commission certify the amendment with suggested modifications. As you know, your procedures require that if you wish to certify an amendment with modifications, you must first deny the LCP amendment request is submitted and then certify with the suggested modifications. And we're recommending that the commission deny the LCP amendment as submitted and then certify the amendment if modified as suggested in the written staff report as further revised by the staff addendum. And those motions are on pages 6 through 8 of the staff report. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, staff.
Madam Chair, one of the reasons that I asked Bob to be more exhaustive in his presentation of the staff report is because this is the first time that this commission will be addressing issues such as a minimum level of sea level rise combined with tsunami run-up and hazards from tsunamis. It will affect other projects that are pending, and some of them are, is one like at Samoa, that we're dealing with, where we're looking at critical infrastructure such as a packaged sewage plant, which is going to be affected by these numbers. So we just wanted to make sure that the commission understood what it is we're recommending here. Of course, we have to take issues on a case-by-case basis, but because this is an LUP amendment, and there was nothing in the city, Crescent City's LCP to address this issue, we had to address it on a broader basis than just for this particular project, which is driving the LCP amendment. So it applies to Crescent City, not just this project site, and then of course it'll be something that we will be using as guidance for subsequent actions that this commission will have to take. That completes the staff report.
All right, thank you. Let me ask the commission if there are any ex parte communications. Seeing none, we have one speaker, Randy Baugh, and the speaker indicates that he's in favor of the staff recommendation. Did you just want to put that on the record, or would you like to, would you like some time?
There you go.
Okay, how much time would you like?
If we could have 12 minutes for a PowerPoint presentation.
All right. And you state your name for the record, please.
My name is Randy Baugh, and I believe they're going to bring up our presentation for us.
Great. So you had a long flight down.
Yeah, it was pretty quick.
Okay.
There you go. We are dealing in Del Norte County, but the project is called Costa Norte, and what that translates to is the North Coast. And that's what this project's about. Some of you will recognize Battery Point Lighthouse. It's on the Coastal Commission handbook, and this is a true coastal treasure. Just to orient you as far as where we are with this site, we're in this area right here is Battery Point Lighthouse. Our project is right here. I became involved with the project a couple years ago due to a coastal home I own in this area. So we're familiar with what's going on around this site. To orient you a little bit more what we've got in this area, we've got an abandoned refinery, a sewer treatment plant, a recycling facility, and a gas refinery, and our site there to the left. Moving in closer, you can see the Hampton Inn in this area, commercial properties, multifamily apartments over here, two unlicensed vacation rentals, and then our site right here, sitting back behind those. While this area has a true coastal treasure, the area itself is in need of a revitalization. This is the project, a property due north of us, the property due east of us, the property due west of us between the coast and our site, and also another property to the west of us between the coast and our site, also a vacation rental right there. Again, this is our site. These are the properties that I just showed you right in here. We're actually set back behind these properties. And like I said, this is a true coastal treasure here. And what we plan to do, this is what the site is currently. It's a vacant 9,500 square foot medical clinic. And Bob went over that quite well. Costa Norte, our project, will be the first building in Crescent City planned and built to the gold certification standards of the U.S. Green Building Council. We believe it may be the first in Del Norte County. The project, we'll go over it in much more detail at the de novo, but what we're going to have is a concrete reinforced parking structure here, approximately 43 residential units on two floors above that. Of those, 16%, approximately 8 of those, will be timeshare and fractional ownership. Going to the next one here, you can see Bob pointed out that we will have a 20-foot wide view corridor in between. That'll just be for blue sky views. There will be no ocean views because of the upslope and topography over there. This will also be our coastal access area. One of the things I want to point out, again, we'll go in much more detail in the de novo, but you see we've got this parking lot right here. We've got a trash enclosure there that's uncovered, and all the roof drains that come off this building here go straight into the parking lot. We get a lot of rain in Crescent City, all the road grime, automobile fluids that come off those cars, and all the sediment that comes off that roof hits that parking lot and goes straight to this area where we've got two surface drains that go into a 15-inch sewer pipe or storm drain, goes 200 feet offshore. All those pollutants right now go straight offshore untreated. Our project will remedy that situation. The other issue we've got right now is the coastal trail, or lack of coastal trail. All we've really got at this point is this little U-shaped around the Hampton Inn. Then you must go up to A Street, over to 3rd Street if you're walking or biking. We've worked with staff and the City of Crescent City to identify these new connector points. With our project, we're going to be developing a brand new coastal trail that will actually double the amount of coastal trails to this valuable asset. And remember, Battery Point Lighthouse is just to the south of us here. In addition, our project will have a public access viewing platform to actually take advantage of this coastal asset. What we're here today to deal with is the LCP amendment. I think staff's done a wonderful job. We're in favor of the recommendations. We're going to ask you to approve the LCP amendment with the required modifications, except for modification 4B. It was 2B, but with the addendum, it became 4B. Modification 4B, and Bob talked about that, says we can have no primary residential units if the modeled 500-year cascading event would bring water to within 1 foot of the bottom of those units. Then on top of that, we need to model for 6 more feet of potential runoff. So we're not talking about, with this cascading event, we're not talking about a powerful wave slamming into the building. What we're talking about is water rising. Now, FEMA has our areas less than a 0.2% chance of annual flooding. If you go 50 feet north of this site, we are out of a flood zone completely. So the only thing that we are talking about is a modeled Cascadian run-up. That's talking about flooding of 30 to 36 feet. Ladies and gentlemen, if we got 36 feet of water in Crescent City, I think we've got more things to worry about than whether or not permanent residents are here or vacationers are on this property. And I think this sets an unsustainable statewide precedent. You have to ask yourself, if you set this LCP amendment up with this precedent, is that something you're going to be able to enforce in all of coastal California? This is actually a modification of the map and some of the stuff that Bob showed you today. We've got these two sites right here. They're the only ones that are affected by the LCP amendment. Our project and this site right here, which has two single-family homes that I believe the Coastal Commission approved a couple of years ago. This is the 64 tsunami and the inundation zone that it came up. As it came up past the coast here, what you had, again, was not a slamming wave at this point. You had sea level rise. And what the problem was, most of the damage was caused by homes being floated up off their foundation and then floated out to sea, not knocked down by a wave. But this right here is the line of the Cascadian event. That's a 500-year model event. You take that line, you add 6 more feet to it for sea level rise. We don't know where that's going to go, but it's certainly a condition that would affect all of Crescent City, and yet just these two properties will be suffering from that condition and this recommendation. Now, the reason that 4B is there is it sets to minimize the risk to life and property, and it's basing that on an untested theory. That theory is visitors are better suited to deal with rising floodwater and evacuation than permanent residents. And the theory is because they don't have property to lose. And we're talking about insured property, and we're talking about personal property in our homes, which both should be insured. And we're talking about an evacuation for a 1-in-500-year event for floodwater, and we've got a 75-year economic life on our property. So I think permanent residents are going to be better suited to deal with an evacuation, and here's why. Permanent residents know what a siren and a precursor event is. Anybody in Crescent City knows that if you get 20 seconds of an earthquake, it's time to move to higher ground. Permanent residents know the evacuation routes and safe zones. I live in that area. I know if there's an earthquake, I go straight up A Street 3 blocks. I'm in a safe zone. When I booked my hotel room here, I did not know we were in a tsunami zone. I took a walk around thinking about the presentation tonight, today, and I said, what would I do in the event of a tsunami? I looked. I don't know where to go. I said to myself, well, I'll probably just go up in that building. It's pretty steady or pretty solid, so I hope it'll hold. But a permanent resident would know how to get out in a tsunami. Permanent residents, especially ones in a condominium, will have a chance to practice through drills. We'll have a tsunami evacuation plan, be much more suited to deal with an evacuation. Permanent residents also have neighbors to alert them. Once I turned off my TV and radio last night, I was on my own. If I'm in a condominium complex with neighbors, somebody's knocking on my door telling me, Randy, it's time to go. And also, after an evacuation, permanent residents have friends and families to stay with. Visitors are immediate users of emergency resources. If I was out down at Lincoln at 10 o'clock with nothing more than clothes in my back, I'm going to need emergency services and resources right away. If I'm a permanent resident, I can go stay at a friend's house. So 4B is an untested theory. Now, that being said, know that we're building this project to the safest possible standard. Concrete reinforced parking structure here with flow-through panels. The residential units will be anchored to that. Our evacuation route, the lowest level on our evacuation route, is 26 feet MSL. As a matter of fact, these residential units right here are going to start out somewhere between 28 and 33 feet MSL. We will probably be above the requirements of that Cascadian study. But what we're asking you to do is wait until the study's done, then decide for yourself whether or not permanent residential units on that ground floor are allowable. One final thing, sea level rise. 4B is asking us to model 6 feet of sea level rise. Sea level in Crescent City is actually going down. This is a fact from the NOAA reports. Sea level in Crescent City has dropped 0.2 feet in the last 100 years. In Eureka, it's gone up 1.5 feet. But in Crescent City, we do not suffer from sea level rise. So when we're asked to put on an arbitrary 6 foot number, we just don't think that's appropriate at that time. So we ask you remove suggested modification 4B, decide for yourself after the study's done whether permanent residential structures are allowable, and approve the LCP amendment. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
All right. Thank you, sir. Don't know if we have any questions right now, but why don't you just have a seat and we'll get back to you in a couple of minutes.
Thank you.
Yes, Madam Chair, before I turn it back to Bob, I think it's important to understand that what we did here was we used the best technical and scientific information that we have available, working with our coastal engineer, our climate change task force, the other folks in the state who are working on the whole issue of sea level rise. I don't know where those numbers came from, but we don't agree with that. Also, the information that we have is that sea level is rising much more rapidly than had been projected because of ice melt and other factors that hadn't been taken into account. So we think our numbers are right. Plus, this is applying the policy in the LCP. When the project comes in, we have told Mr. Baugh that he is then entitled to bring in specific information relative to the site, which takes into account uplift and other factors. So this is a policy for the LCP, not just for this property. The other thing is relative to permanent residential. We wrestled with this issue, and I felt very strongly that there is a difference when we allow the creation of new residential properties, and that's what's involved here, that we have a I just think there's a higher standard that ought to be applied in those circumstances. Not, obviously, single-family lots. Those are existing, and we're not going to say that we're concerned. We have to require them to elevate to levels that are unreasonable. But when you're creating new residential through subdivision, we think that that requires closer scrutiny. This commission has approved a number of temporary uses or visitor-serving uses in hazard areas, run-up areas, based on the notion that those can be more rapidly cleared when you have a warning of an event that's about to happen. So we feel there is a significant distinction between creation of new permanent residential, primary residential units, and visitor-serving or part-time. With that, let me ask Bob to add a couple of other observations.
Well, Peter covered most of what I wanted to say. I just want to point out a couple of things. There is some confusion on the suggested modification. It actually is suggested modification number two, but the reference to 4B is the LUP policy. And so where the language is, if you look at the addendum, it's on the bottom of page one and goes on to page two. And I just wanted to add that there's discussion about how it may be hundreds of years before you have the next tsunami that's big enough to affect large areas of Crescent City. That's true. On the other hand, the last significant event of that size occurred in the year 1700, and historically, the scientists are telling us that the periodicity of that is somewhere on the order of 200 to 500, averaging around 300 years. And so it could occur this next moment. Our recommendation is to take that into account and realize that these are things that do happen here in Crescent City, up and down the coast, and we feel it's appropriate to take that into account. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Let me bring it back to the commission then. Commissioner Mercurimi.
Through the chair, just some questions for staff, please. Just so that I understand how we arrived at certain analysis and staff recommendation, what are we pitching the sea level rise as? Is it from a FEMA standard, or is it from another standard that we're determining what the projected sea level rises are?
The projections are from several sources, the IPPC report, from the other reports that I indicated in the presentation. There isn't uniform agreement on exactly how much sea level will rise at any particular point in time, and so the approach we're taking is to look at the range of best information, best educated determinations of what sea level rise would be, and analyze specific projects over that range to determine what effects the sea level rise would have on erosion and tsunami wave inundation levels, etc. But the 3 to 6 feet that's incorporated in modification number two matches the sort of range of the credible projections, and these are the numbers that, as I mentioned, have been used by the Coastal Conservancy, by the Climate Task Force is looking at that, and that's the most generally accepted range of what levels will be.
Yeah, I think that's the main point, that this is the number around which consensus has formed. And so we are using that consensus number That doesn't mean it won't change in the years ahead, especially as we get new information about the rapidity of ice melt. But that's the number that we're using because of the consensus that's
for this locality.
Well, not necessarily for this specific locality, and that's why we've built in the provisions of looking at site-specific kind of factors like uplift, the relative uplift of the land in relation to sea level rise. So we do allow those kinds of factors to be taken into consideration with this policy, but we're assuming a level of sea level rise in the range that Bob mentioned.
And just so that I understand the scope of our reach in being able to compel this consideration in preparing for sea level rise and tsunami protection, since this was not in their LCP, why wouldn't then the requirement be expected that their local planning department or a Department of Emergency Management be able to then address this in lieu of our ability to do this? I'm just trying to understand jurisdictional issues here as I become more familiar with the Coastal Commission's impact.
Well, I've got to say, when we first started looking at the LCP and I found out it didn't have a policy dealing with flooding, I was just shocked, especially in this location. And so we felt, since this is an amendment to the land use plan of the LCP, that it was essential to incorporate some standards and guidelines for dealing with flooding from sea level rise and tsunamis, which wasn't in there. So we used the best scientific information that we have to incorporate into the LCP. And we're going to be looking at other LCPs as well as they come forward with amendments and or updates.
So this is a new template then potentially on a case-by-case is what you're saying.
That's why I think it's so important. It is a new template, but on the other hand, you will be looking at each one on a case-by-case basis because we're not suggesting this as a regulation, for example.
Well, that segues exactly my next question in terms of enforcement. How is it then that if this is not a regulation but at least a tailored suggestion or insistence that it be part of their LCP, then what does that suggest in terms of our scope of enforcement?
Well, first of all, when you act on this, it will go back to the city, and the city will then have the choice whether to accept your modification or not, or come back with a minor change to it. Once it's accepted and it becomes part of the LCP, then that's the standard against which new development has to be measured. And if the local government refuses or fails to apply that, in those areas where you have appellate jurisdiction, you'll probably see some appeals. But our hope is that when the city adopts these modifications, if you go along with them, that those will be the standards that they will apply.
And then one last question on siren and warning announcements. I didn't see much of that in any of the analysis. And there were, as I recall, two failures when there had been a tsunami threat several years ago where the siren didn't go off. And I'm wondering, in that we discussed quite substantially in San Francisco at a disaster council meeting, like, why weren't we not informed of what happened in Crescent City? I'm wondering why there was no linkage to the question of certain standards of, if we are going to go to this trouble of demanding a certain protocol for their planning and protection, then is it out of our scope to suggest something with regard to notification to the citizenry itself?
There is built into the recommendation a warning, and I'll let Bob explain to you, a whole system of warning and alerting people to potential tsunami events. And this project, or this LCP amendment, requires participation in that. We have also been active through your coastal engineer in planning for evacuation routes, signage, the kinds of things that emergency response requires and preparedness requires. So Leslie Ewing has been involved in that on a statewide basis, but that is beyond the jurisdiction of this commission. That's Office of Emergency Services and others. But we do have a provision built in here, and I'd ask Bob to mention that.
Yes, thank you, Peter. Suggested modification number 3 would require, excuse me, that development prepare a tsunami evacuation safety plan. But part of that is that it's required to be coordinated with the local offices of emergency services, the local police and fire, so that whatever plan is developed is going to be consistent and not at odds with the regional planning for tsunami evacuation that's occurring. And I should mention that Humboldt and Del Norte County is really in the lead, as I understand it, with regard to region-wide evacuation and warning planning. There's an office of the National Weather Service on Humboldt Bay that, in cooperation with Professor Dengler at Humboldt State and a team of officials, has been conducting routine drills in Humboldt County to start with, and it's expanding to Del Norte, where the citizenry is notified of a tsunami drill. They're testing the sirens. They're testing the response of emergency providers. There are plans afoot to add more sirens in different locations. And in many respects, Crescent City is in the forefront of a lot of this. They've had tsunami evacuation signage up longer than anyone else in California. But our view is that we need to not do anything that would contradict what's going on with those efforts and in requiring, you know, plans for site-specific development to make sure that it's consistent and integrated with the regional planning for evacuation and warning that's going on.
Thank you.
Okay. Commissioner Juan.
Yes. Just a couple of questions. The sea level rise standard that we've set of 3 to 6 feet per century, that's basically what we're now setting. But each individual project can come back and go through site-specific analysis to determine what level should be applied for that site. Am I correct?
That's correct.
Yeah. So this, although this we've setting a general standard, we've picked what we think from the credible science is what's going to happen. And if anything, from what we've been learning, every time we set these guesses or standards, whatever you want to call it, they turn out to be too low, not too high.
Right.
The other question I have is, and I don't know if this is the appropriate place to do it or not, is there anything in here that deals with invasive species and a prohibition on invasive species and planting of it?
No.
Nothing in the LCP amendment, but there are existing policies of the LCP that could be applied at the during the review of individual projects.
That's all I mean. Thank you.
Commissioner Cram?
Yes. I'm just concerned when we undertake new responsibility for review and imposing our limited resources on a new process that would be statewide. I mean, I'm very concerned about this. You know, we talk about how we don't have enough staff, we don't have enough money. Obviously, there are going to be further cuts. I just don't see this as something we should undertake on a regular basis statewide. I'd like to understand sort of what resources would be devoted to this. How much time do you think it applies every time a LCP comes up?
Well,
how much staff hours were spent on this?
Well, Commissioner Cram, we think, and I think the direction we got from the commission and certainly what we sense as the kind of changing landscape is such that this is one of the most important issues that we as a coastal commission can and must address. And that's why we're preparing, at the direction of the commission, a request for funding support for a comprehensive planning effort around Humboldt Bay, for example, to deal with sea level rise and the impact that's going to have on infrastructure as well as development. So the way that the Coastal Act is set up is that you don't deal with it on a statewide basis. You deal with it as these individual LCP amendments come forward, And that's what the situation that we're in now. So we feel that because of climate change and sea level rise and the hazards that creates, that it's incumbent on us, it's our responsibility to make sure that we don't ignore that particular issue. And we have spent considerable time on this because we know it's going to set a precedent for our involvement and review of other amendments as they come forward.
Right. I'm just concerned sure because of the right. expansion of our jurisdiction. How much time was spent on this in terms of staff hours?
Considerable time, and we think it's absolutely essential that we do that. That's
but what about pushing it down to the local level? What about just putting in the LUP that it has to, whatever they do, has to comply with best available data in this area? And pushing back those resources onto local communities that if they want to do it, they'll do it.
First of all, they don't have the capacity, and secondly,
but we don't.
Yes, we do. We do have the expertise. We do have the task forces that we work with, whether it's NOAA, federal agencies, or state agencies. We bring that to bear on these amendments, which then provide guidance to the local government, and they will be the ones to whom this responsibility will be delegated, and that's what the LCP amendment is about.
I just have to say to my fellow commissioners, I feel just adding another layer of review and more staff time, which we continually, I don't want to say continually, we've taken the opportunity to expand our jurisdiction in a number of circumstances. I think it's really unwise. I think there's a tremendous amount of responsibility comes with that to continually survey the best available data out there, continually gather information, make decisions on each community. I'm really against this. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Schellenberger.
Just along that lines, I was asked our legal counsel to just direct us to the policies in the Coastal Act, which make it clear that this is, in fact, within our jurisdiction.
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, the Coastal Act policies 30253 A and B require that as part of our review, we use the standard of minimizing risks to life and property in areas of high geologic flood and fire hazards, which is where we feel that we're obligated to look at this. And you can find that in your staff report on page 27. 30253B also requires us to look at LCP amendments in terms of assuring stability and structural integrity, and ensuring that neither create nor contribute significantly to erosion, geologic instability, or destruction of the site or surrounding areas, or in any way require the construction of protective devices that would substantially alter natural landforms along bluffs and cliffs. So the staff report talks about how this standard, the suggested modifications built into this, conform to this standard, and the way that we ensure that staff time isn't spent on every individual project is to focus on the LCP level and therefore have standards that local governments use when looking at individual permits. So rather than looking at individual permits ourselves, this is setting the LCP level standard at the local level.
Thank you. I just wanted to have that on the record. I appreciate it that it is clearly within our jurisdiction and not an expansion beyond anything that was called for in the Coastal Act. And on top of that, it was early in this current administration, there was direction to all state agencies that we were to consider sea level rise as we made land use decisions. So I think this is also consistent not only with our mandate in the law, but also with the direction from the governor. So having said that, on a broad brush, I just, looking at the modification 2.B, and I'm not going to make a change to this, but it strikes me that when we're facing natural disasters that we know where they're going to occur, not when, and whether it's a tsunami or an earthquake, or geologic, something that's unstable, that the first action should be to avoid it rather than to try and engineer our way through it. And maybe that just comes from my lack of
being an engineer, I'm not all that confident that engineers are always able to engineer around the power of Mother Nature. So I just leave that with staff to think about in the future. I mean, I think that for tsunamis in particular, that that local government should first of all be looking at avoiding tsunami areas for development, and when that's not possible, then engineering something that's they think would be safe for a tsunami.
Well, and that's a good point, and we actually did look at that when we first became aware of this project in terms of should it be approved at all in this location. And because of the nature of what's there and the zoning and the surrounding community, and because of our work with the property owner, we felt we could address our concerns without having to suggest denying the project in the first place with the conditions, modifications we're recommending. And then, of course, when the project comes specifically before the commission, to address it there. We have identified and worked with local governments to set aside areas. And after the 64 tsunami, you look at the waterfront in Crescent City, and a lot of development that was there before is gone. And it's parkland now, it's open, so you have a whole different landscape than you had before 1964. It's just hard to go back when you have these developed areas like this area of Crescent City.
Well, I am not speaking about this project. You know, we can have that discussion when the project comes forward, but it strikes me as a general policy that, first of all, they should be looking at, is it feasible to just avoid the tsunami area? And if not, then to engineer it. And the way this 2B is written, it doesn't require the looking at the option of avoiding first. And if avoidance isn't feasible, then to engineer it to be safe.
Okay, we have
That's
some other
correct.
Folks lined up to speak. Are you finished?
Okay. We didn't address that that way.
Let me just say that as a local government representative, that we have in every conference that we attend now, we have sessions about sea level rise and greenhouse gas emissions, and how these policies must be included in our general plan updates and any other plan update, including our local coastal plan updates. These policies must be included, and in terms of presentations that we've had from the Attorney General, litigation is initiated if you don't address them and if they aren't specific enough about how they're going to be implemented. So that is something that at the local government level we're already dealing with and we must include in our plans. For Crescent City, I just want to say I'd like to see this move forward today because they've done so much work. These plans are not updated on a regular basis because not a lot is happening. So they're always project driven. And as Mr. Baugh has indicated, he's got a great project for that community. He's been working with staff for quite a long time to bring this forward. He's addressed so many things, and I want to thank you for all the great work you've done with the city, and you're actually representing them today in terms of being appearing before the commission. And I think that you made some excellent arguments about this trade-off of residential versus visitor, because I think you're right, and we see this in Humboldt County through the drills that we have. It's the local people who train and in terms of evacuation plans. And even though we might just be doing a guideline now, it's the specifics of your project where we have a mitigation that deals with evacuation that maybe we can look at that more. But, we're already doing drills in Humboldt County. We do evacuations and invite state and federal representatives to see, here's how we're going to evacuate our community, say, of Samoa, if we have an issue. And that's how you save lives. I think that was mentioned by staff that there were 11 lives lost in Del Norte County when we had the tsunami in 64. But that was because even though they were in a safe place, they didn't understand that you have to wait until the all clear signal goes, and they went back down to check their businesses and were caught when another sea level rise or incident happened. So there were multiple incidents during that. So you know, I appreciate the comments about statewide, but here we have an applicant that's just done a great job with it, working with the city. We have a project that they truly need economically. It would do it would help a lot in for a lot of different reasons in terms of jobs and visitor serving. And so I think we can deal specifically with your concerns when your project comes forward specifically. So anyway, with that in mind, Commissioner Graham?
I just wanted to address something that was said here that, you know, this may not be an expansion of our jurisdiction, as Commissioner Schellenberger said, but having had, even if we were to maintain that we had this jurisdiction for the last 30 years, and we never exercised it until now, it is a new assertion of jurisdiction. I think that we should really table this until we see funding for the additional work that goes into this, just in terms of Amendment 2, and putting forth these requirements until we know we have the funding. I'm amazed in this environment that we can get funding, but if we do, then, you know, if we have the money set aside to do it, then great. I would think there's better uses of the money. There are other pressing issues, but okay. So I would propose we eliminate that provision. Thank you.
Commissioner Mercurimi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm prepared to make a motion. I guess there's a series of them. I move that the Commission certify Land Use Plan Amendment number CRCMAJ109 is submitted by the City of Crescent City and concur with staff recommendations of a no vote.
Okay, we have a motion by Commissioner Mercurimi, a second by Commissioner Schellenberger. The maker and seconder are recommending a no vote. Failure will result in the rejection of the Land Use Plan Amendment as submitted and adoption of the resolution and findings in the staff report. Would you like to speak to your motion?
I'll wait to the last motion.
All right. And Commissioner Schellenberger, no? Okay. Is there any objection? Oh, I guess we better have a roll call vote on this item. This is, if you look on page 6. Yeah, if that's okay. So no objections to unanimous roll call vote on this item. Okay, seeing none, the motion passes. Commissioner Mercurimi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Second motion, I move that the Commission certify Land Use Plan Amendment number CRCMAJ109 for the City of Crescent City, if it is modified as suggested in the staff report, and concur with staff recommendation of a yes vote.
Okay, we have a motion by Commissioner Mercurimi, a second by Commissioner Schellenberger. The maker and seconder recommending a yes vote. Passage of the motion will result in the certification of the Land Use Plan Amendment with the suggested modifications. Would you like to speak to this one? No? Okay. Is there any objection to unanimous? Would you like to comment on this one?
Well, this is Commissioner where the Cram? Amendment.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to move to amend the vote, the motion on the. I'm sorry. I'd like to move to amend the motion that's on the floor to eliminate, I believe it was change 2, was that, or old 4? Was it old 2 and 2B? To change 2B to eliminate that requirement in its entirety. Do I have a second?
Okay, we have an amending motion by Commissioner Cram, second by Commissioner Burke, to amend the motion that's on the floor. Could we get a comment back from staff?
Yes, I'm not sure I understand. Are you suggesting that the entirety of 2B be, which is now, I believe, 4B, right, Bob?
It's there's two different numbering systems. The 4B is the policy number. 2B is the suggested modification number. But it's this. It's the language on page 2 that has of the addendum that has 2B crossed out and 4B double underlined.
What page is that?
I guess it would
what
be both.
Page 2 of the addendum.
I guess it would be
2B. I don't see.
I guess it would be 4B from what I'm looking at.
Yeah, but the point is what your motion would do is eliminate the suggested modifications relevant to sea level rise and tsunami run up.
All of 4B, yeah.
Okay. Okay, it's the entirety of 4B on the addendum is our suggested modification. Your recommendation is to delete that entirely as a modification, and we would, of course, oppose that because that's the fundamental point.
Can I ask a question,
that's raised
Peter?
Here.
If we approve that, wouldn't that put us out of conformity with current law?
No, absolutely not. No.
I said if we took it out.
Oh, if you took it out, yes.
Yes.
If you
yes.
took it out, it
yes,
would make
right.
you out of conformity.
I agree. I mean, I think this is what we need to do.
It'll stall the project.
So just the removal of the staff modifications would seem to do it?
We're saying that the staff recommended modification is what the law requires.
You got it.
And just to comment on that, I think that if you take that out, it'll be challenged because you won't be in compliance with the law, and it will stall the project. And I think, that what we've talked about today is there is an opportunity to address that when the permit comes forward specifically on this project.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
And the chair perfectly explained that.
All right, and I just would like to get a comment from the applicant. Mr. Baugh, if you'd like to.
Thank you. It's Randy Baugh. And we're not opposed to that entire section. The only part of that section that really we feel is applicable is the restriction on permanent residential units in that model zone. So if you take out just that one portion, then I think that can let that project come before you, and then you make the decision on the permanent residential units in that zone.
And I think what we're looking at here is going ahead with policy, and then when your project comes forward, looking at that specifically at that time, and hopefully we'll have even better information from you then.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we have an amending motion and a second. Okay, the second has been withdrawn. Is anyone else seconding? All right, then we don't have an amending motion before us. We just have a motion by Commissioner Mercurimi with a second by Commissioner Schallenberger. Passage of the motion will result in certification of the land use plan amendment with suggested modifications. Would you like to speak to your motion?
No.
Okay. Is there any, can we get a roll call vote on this item?
Commissioner Burke.
Aye.
Burke, yes. Commissioner Wesel.
Yes.
Wesel, yes. Commissioner Cram?
No.
Cram, no. Commissioner Mercurimi?
Aye.
Mercurimi, yes. Commissioner Potter?
Aye.
Potter, yes. Commissioner Schallenberger?
Yes.
Schallenberger, yes. Commissioner Wan?
Yes.
Wan, yes. Chair Neely?
Yes.
Neely, yes. The vote is 7-1.
All right, thank you.
Madam Chair.
We have a couple more motions, so.
I'm sorry.
Commissioner Mercurimi?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Third motion, I move that the Commission reject Implementation Program Amendment number CRC-MAG-1-09 for the City of Crescent City as submitted and concur with staff recommendations as a yes vote.
We have a motion by Commissioner Mercurimi and a second by Commissioner Schallenberger. Passage of the motion will result in rejection of the Implementation Program Amendment and adoption of the resolutions and findings in the staff report. Would you like to speak to this motion? No? Okay. Is there any objection to unanimous roll call vote on this item? Seeing none, the Commission hereby denies certification of the implementation program submitted for the City of Crescent City. Commissioner Mercurimi?
Last motion, Madam Chair. I move that the Commission certify the implementation program amendment number CRC-MAJ-1-09 for the City of Crescent City if it is modified as suggested in the staff report and concur with staff recommendations of a yes vote.
We have a motion by Commissioner Mercurimi and a second by Commissioner Schallenberger. The maker and seconder are recommending a yes vote, and passage of the motion will result in the certification of the implementation program with suggested modification and adoptions of the resolution and findings in the staff report. And would you like to speak to this motion?
Just real quickly, mm-hmm. largely speaking to the thrust of all four motions in this discussion, I appreciate this discussion very much, and I don't think that the Coastal Commission is extending beyond its reach as defined, I think, within the powers of the Coastal Act, or I think within the history of the Coastal Commission itself. And I think that the question even though it may not have complete uniformity in its determination on sea level rise, I appreciate that the fact that the Coastal Commission is addressing this. And I think that if we can elevate or upgrade, one, the discourse, and two, the expectations of localities, I want to be part of that, I think, part of that endeavor. So I appreciate that this case for Crescent City is helping, I think, define and push this issue from a state perspective.
Thank you. Commissioner Schellenberg? Seconds those comments. All right. Is there any objection to unanimous roll call vote on this item? Seeing none, the commission hereby certifies the implementation program amendment for the city of Crescent City. And thank you for coming down today. We appreciate it. And good wishes with your project.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As you recall, we trailed statewide reports. What?
We have a couple more items.
I'm sorry. I am so eager.
I'll take that as a clue to make it brief. The item is item 5B, which is the application of the City of Arcata, which involves the involved the enhancement and restoration of wetland habitat along Fickle Hill Creek between Highway 101 and Old Arcata Road in Arcata in Humboldt County. And the project involves reconfiguring a approximately 1,600-foot-long reach of the creek, resulting in a more meandering channel that's 300 feet longer, installing boulder log structures for cover for salmon, a wooden bridge, and replanting 2.5 acres of native riparian vegetation. Now, we're recommending approval with special conditions. The project is similar to some others that the commission has reviewed in recent months that have proposed restoration of diked historic baylands. And the staff believes that the proposed restoration would replicate the biological processes that used to exist at the site prior to the modification by man, and will result in significant enhancements to habitat values, and believes that it does qualify as restoration under your wetland fill policy, and it carries out the mandates of sections 30231 and 30230 to restore, where feasible, the biological productivity of wetlands for the enhancement of marine organisms and for protecting human health.
And we have no speaker slips on this item, just so you know.
Thank you. The issue that's raised, okay, I just want to point out that there is an inconsistency with the ag conversion policies, and I just want you to be aware that the recommendation would involve using the conflict resolution provisions of the Coastal Act, determining that on balance, it is more protective of coastal resources to carry out the mandate of those restoration policies, even though it will result in the conversion of about 2.5 acres of ag land. We have several conditions that require monitoring and best management practices, and we think as recommended with those conditions, we believe that it's consistent with the Coastal Act, and we're recommending that you adopt the staff recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you, staff. And we have no speaker slips, as I indicated. Are there any ex parte communications from commissioners? Seeing none, what's the pleasure of the commission?
I move that the commission approve coastal development permit number 1-09-020 pursuant to staff recommendation. Recommend a yes vote.
And we have a motion by Commissioner Hueso, second by Commissioner Mercurimi. They're recommending a yes vote. Passage of the motion will result in approval of the permit as condition and adoption of the resolutions and findings in the staff report. Would you like to speak to the motion?
No, thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Commissioner, is there any objection to a unanimous roll call vote on this item? Seeing none, the commission hereby approves a coastal development permit. Thank you. And
I think that's it.
That
we
is
can do
it.
The statewide matters that we trailed.
Yes.
We have a set of minutes to approve.
Okay. Is there a motion on the minutes? We have a motion and a second to approve the minutes. Any objection to unanimous roll call vote on this item? Seeing none, minutes are approved.
Then I guess it'd be commissioners' reports, if anybody has one.
Commissioner reports.
Conservancy.
Conservancy was a written report. Susan Hanch attended that.
Okay. Santa Monica Mountains Conservancy.
No reports. Okay.
Then it's the Deputy Attorney General.
Yes, commissioners, through the chair, I have three items to report. The first one is in Habitat for Hollywood Beach versus California Coastal Commission. Judge Yaffe recently denied the petition for writ of mandate regarding the Boating and Instructional Safety Center. We're hoping that that's the end of this litigation. In Surfrider versus California Coastal Commission and Poseidon, the court denied the petition for writ of mandate against the commission in the challenge to the desal plant in Carlsbad. Just so you'll know, there is a separate challenge to the State Lands Commission's approval. The court has not yet ruled on that one. And in FAR versus California Coastal Commission, I reported on this successful outcome in this appellate case last month, but the court has now published that case involving the commission's ability to protect or not protect visual resources on a case-by-case basis in, I think it was, Redondo Beach or Hermosa. And that concludes my report. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have the legislative report, which is was handed out to you, and unless you have any questions, it speaks for itself.
Okay. We're going to lose a quorum here, it looks like. I'm sorry to say, because I think we only have seven here right now, and Potter
Dave,
just left.
Dave.
Just we have like six public comment slips as well.
Can I? Well, wait. I just need...
We need an action on a public education item.
Yes,
so,
an agreement.
Could you want to do that quickly?
Yeah, we asked for the commission to approve the agreement for public relations and marketing of the whale tail license plate.
Could I? All right. We have a motion by Commissioner Wan, a second by Commissioner Burke.
Sorry.
Not on this one. Okay. Are there any objection to a unanimous roll call vote on this? Seeing none, the motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, then we'll go to the public comments. Oh, I'm sorry, Commissioner Mercurimi.
Hi, through the chair to the staff. Just a quick question, and I know I'm doing this clumsily, but I just would love to get some feedback on what we're hearing about in terms of an issue that may be coming to us with regard to offshore oil drilling. Is there anything that you can expound on in terms of anticipation of this issue?
Well, we have reported to the commission in the past on the status of it, but I think it was before you came on the commission. So I'll ask Allison to give you an update at the next meeting or in August for sure. We're waiting for the Secretary of Interior to deal with the question of whether or not there are going to be any new proposed lease sales off of California. But, of course, if there are, those will have to come to the commission for your review. We're hoping that there won't be. The commission's on record opposing new leasing off of the California coast in frontier areas. The only other pending oil issue is the one in Sacramento relative to the PXP project in the Santa Barbara area. And my understanding is that the effort to allow this to proceed without the State Lands Commission's participation did not succeed yesterday, and I don't know if it's going to resurface, but it's still hanging out there.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, thank you. Okay. All right, well, let's take a public comment then. Carla Andrus, you have 3 minutes, and then followed by Nancy Marino and David Barish. Yes?
Would it be okay if I go first, please?
No, go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Certainly.
Thank you. David Barish from We Are Marina Del Rey. I'll just wait until they're available.
And 3 minutes?
I just want to wait until the commissioners are available.
Oh, okay.
I'm here to talk about this new approach that was discussed yesterday by Coastal Commission staff. Obviously, none of us heard about it. You made a small announcement, but none of us heard about it, so we didn't have a chance to speak about it yesterday. And we're quite appalled by this approach. And before I get into the details, I'd like to ask that this item come back as an agenda item so that the public can have participation in the process that you've determined to deal with the county. It's really important that we have a say in it. We know these projects a lot more than probably staff does. And I want to tell you about these pipeline projects that were brought to your attention yesterday. These six projects, which are well into the design phase and into the entitlement process. That's not true. That's not true at all. Two projects don't even have regional planning applications submitted yet. One was disapproved by the design control board. It was disapproved by the design control board. They decided to go ahead with it anyway. One, they just issued the RFQ 3 weeks ago. So unless they've already worked with the developers behind the scenes, then that process isn't even close to being well-designed. Well, only one EIR has been circulated, and it's just been recirculated yesterday or last week. These six pipeline projects, they are nowhere near being ready. This is even hoodwinked. And let me tell you, why are we abandoning the LCP recommendations that we spent 4 years working hard to do? Why are we abandoning that now? Why is this commission doing that? If you go with this plan, these six projects, I'm going to tell you, these six projects, we were told by the staff that they require minor LCP amendments and they don't change the land use entitlements. That's not true. Every single one of these changes land use from public coastal access and use to private development. That's significant. And what you're doing here is you're going to rubber stamp the county's dream to redevelop this marina. And this is unacceptable. Not that we spent all this time. Now, Mr. Douglas says you can't go to the legislature. Well, we can argue about the 1 year when that started. We disagree with staff about when that 1 year started. But you can go to the legislature. The other thing you can do is that every single one of these projects is appealable to this Coastal Commission. So you can just let this go, let them go through their process, and we will appeal every single one of these to your commission. And then you guys have the power to make it right. And we can support you on that. But this approach is not the way to go. And we want this agendized so that we can discuss this. And we have a lot of information. And we can provide that information for you. And so I hope that you will do this. Thank you very much for
all
your
right.
time.
Thank you. Carla, do you want to come next?
Yes.
Okay.
I think that the Attorney General would be very interested in these pipeline projects as they have separate EIRs. When they first went through the process, and it's been a long, long process, when they first went through it, they were coming in just piecemeal, one at a time. The OT parking lot was going to be a retirement hotel. The IR was going to be a Marriott. But they married all of these different projects together, three major projects together for each developer, and made separate EIRs. And if the Attorney General doesn't look at this and just see it from the get-go, that this is just so completely, it's a big mess. That's what happened with the Design Control Board. I'm just so beside myself. I couldn't even believe what I heard this morning that brought me down here. But when the Design Control Board looked at these, they said, no. You have got to go back with these projects and you've got to scale them down, or you've got to think of new sites because you don't even have enough parking for your own projects here. And so they created this parking plan of five levels of parking on one public parking lot that would assume all of the misplaced parking. Susan Cloak said, absolutely no, you can't do this. This violates the Coastal Act. And we were denied that process. This process has been dysfunctional by design, and the county just wants to push this through. We heard that when Santos Kreiman became the new director. Stan Wininski, we saw the back of him. We didn't even have the gold watch ceremony. They just told us, you know what, he did his 16 projects, it's there, it's into discussion. And now they want to take six of those major projects that the Design Control Board said, you're back to the drawing board on these. It will just totally ruin the marina forever. I don't know. I really wish we had more time for this. I do hope that we have this on the agenda so that we can talk this through. Thank you.
Thank you. Nancy Marino.
Good morning, Honorable Commissioners. Nancy Vernon Marino for We Are Marina Del Rey. I just watched Mr. Ainsworth's presentation from yesterday morning about 10 minutes ago, and I have to say that it really astonishes me that this planning decision to take these projects and make them a pipeline, I don't know, to me that seems like a lead pipe, but that was a planning decision for which there was no community input. And I'd like to correct something that Mr. Barish said earlier about the RFQ for the boat launch ramp. That was not on the county's website, unless that's a private RFQ, which it might possibly be. That project hasn't even been proposed yet. Nothing about that. The details, the project details, were not presented to the Board of Supervisors even. It is a stealth project. Now, one of the things that Mr. Ainsworth said and that the commissioners have reflected is that you cannot require the county to do an LCP amendment or update. This is true. But can you not require the county to do a community planning process? That was your recommendation, is that all of this should be done through a community planning process. That's what we have been asking the county for the last 5 years that I have been very actively involved. We want the county to bring this plan to the community and say, this is what we're planning, because they haven't. They've broken it up into 18 separate projects, and they're bringing it one by one by one in all these little meetings. There's over 200 meetings at which little bits of these projects are revealed. And our group has managed to put together enough of it to get pretty much the full picture, and we are alarmed. And we're saying you need to tell the community, you need to involve the community. They have made major land use planning decisions without public input. And the public input is that this equity here in the marina, we bought and paid for it. This is public land that was purchased for public recreation. And we paid it. It was paid off in 1993. And these parking lots are underutilized because the parking lots were put there in anticipation that once the bond was paid off, recreation would be developed so that the parking lots would have something to be there for. And now they're completely changing the public mandate without a public referendum. So you can require that the county do a community planning process and not waste your time. This needs to be done. Dr. Burke, you asked for it in January. You said public hearing. And the county said, okay, we're going to do that as soon as we have the final recommendations. They haven't done it. They still are not doing it, and now they're trying to sneak this little pipeline project. It's a lead pipe, and they're hitting us in the back of the head. Okay. Please, you can require them to do a community planning process, and I would really beseech you today to make that mandatory. Thank you.
Thank you. Dan Gottlieb, followed by John Mahas, Andy Bassett, and Lynn Shapiro.
Okay, I didn't have time to study this.
Give your name for the record, please, sir.
I'm Dan Gottlieb, representing Marina. We are Marina Del Rey. I didn't have time to study this report, which seemed to have been before most of us got here yesterday. But I do know that there's a law, Section 30007.5 of the Legislative Findings and Declarations, which says that the legislature further finds and recognizes that conflicts may occur in between one or more policies of this division. The legislature therefore declares that in carrying out the provisions of this division, such conflicts be resolved in a manner which, on balance, is the most protective of the coastal acts. Now, if you guys are concerned about protecting the coastal acts, I think you can use this against whatever the county wants to say, because they've changed all the rules. In fact, they've violated their own strategic plan, which is supposed to protect the quality of life of people who live in the unincorporated areas of the county. That's right here. And their improvement of the quality of life is to move them all out, which is the end result of all this sort of things. They're building out over the water, which is supposed to be forbidden by the LCP. And all these statements, all these things are very difficult to find. They violate whatever conditions you've put on, like a timeshare, and it leaves us. There's a whale out here, which keeps coming up, and you can sort of see it come up. You can see in the water where it's going to come up, and the same thing seems to be happening here. That we seem to have a vast attempt by government to confuse ignore the people's rule, the people's will, and it goes against the whole idea of why the Coastal Commission is founded. They knew that they'd have to protect the coast from the local governments and people and developers, and that's why we have this whole thing. And I hope you do your duty.
Thank you, sir. Commissioner Wan had a question.
Can I ask that, since you are dealing with the pipeline projects and what you said yesterday, and there's been some comments made about whether the projects that you're looking at are actually very far along in the pipeline, that you take a look to see if that's true? There's apparently one project that hasn't even been proposed yet in those projects. So if you could take a look to see just how far those specific projects are, if they don't have their EIRs approved, they're not very far along in the process. So,
and just so that I understand, and the purpose of that is for what?
Well, in this whole issue of what you and the county should be doing at this point and what you bring in, you made the point that these are the projects that are already in the pipeline and that they're pretty far advanced, and you would be looking at that. And so the question becomes just whether these particular properties are appropriately being looked at this time. And I'm asking you to take a look at that based on what we've heard.
We didn't make any judgment as to how far along they are in the process. We just said they were in the pipeline. And that means they were the ones that the county brought to our attention and said that these are the ones we're looking at for permitting. But you know, that obviously will be a factor when we get to this aggregate amendment that we were talking about, because I think all of them require some sort of amendment to the LCP.
Okay. Commissioner Burke?
And Jack is hiding in the back, and if you want more information,
yeah,
we can
so
drag him up here. And
yeah, we see you, Jack. Commissioner Burke?
Madam Chairman, I after hearing this testimony this morning, you know, we've been very sensitive to this issue for a long, long time. But I'm speaking into the microphone, okay, unless I put it in the back of it's really me. So I will next week be looking into this further and report back to the commission, too.
Thank you.
And Madam Chair, also I've spoken to a member of the public who just spoke to you, and Jack and I and staff will meet with them to explain what it is that we're doing. I announced it on Wednesday that we were going to talk about it. There was no action. We just explained it. But we're happy to sit down with members of the public who are interested. We're trying to be as transparent as we can. We have nothing to hide. And, we have everything to explain.
All right. Thank you. Commissioner Mercurimi?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Regarding this issue, and just to the staff, a quick comment. I thought some of the public testimony just now was helpful and persuasive, so that should we get to a point of considering any action, then I'd like at least that action to also consider, I think, the points that were put on the table by what we heard this morning.
All right. Thank you. John Nahas? Is he not in the room right now? Let me go to Andy Bissett. And then Lynn Shapiro, and we'll see if John makes it back. Do you have a PowerPoint to pull up? Oh, here we go. Nice.
Hello, my name is Andy Bissett, president of Marina Boat Owners Association. Some of my photos in the last couple of days have shown you the true ugliness of the marina. I hope that your visit here has allowed you the opportunity to see it for yourself firsthand, not just to take my word for it. The photo on the screen right now I took shows the size of boats that you guys are eliminating with your judgments and rulings. Could we have that photo back up, please? This is the activity that doesn't show. When you look out at these empty boat slips out here, they're not empty because these guys are out there having fun in the bay. They're empty because you have facilitated the removal of their boat slips. You have facilitated the removal of these people from the marina. Marina Del Rey is a graveyard of broken dreams because of your decisions and those of the county and their underhanded tactics. Could we see the other photo, please? I know that developers with truckloads of money are backed up to your doors, influencing you, influencing the county, influencing government representatives everywhere. And it's tempting when our state and cities are in such desperate need. But I don't forgive what you're doing, getting rid of this kind of activity on the bay. These are the boats that you are getting rid of with your decisions to allow developers to overdevelop large slips, willy-nilly remove small boat slips for no reason whatsoever except greed and corruption. That because the small boaters, it seems, don't bring in enough money anymore for them to be a viable commodity in Marina Del Rey. They are shut out. I hope that you will remember the beauty that you are destroying. I see that beauty here. That's why these people are out there. I don't know how to appeal to truckloads of money, but I hope that you will reconsider what you're doing.
Thank you, Mr. Bissett. Lynn Shapiro?
Good morning. I'm Lynn Shapiro, 22-year-old, 22-year resident of Marina Del Rey and member of We Are Marina Del Rey and proud to be one. I can't believe that the honorable commissioners came here to our community and slipped in a staff approach to dealing with the County of Los Angeles about Marina Del Rey without putting it into your agenda, with no public announcement. Then came a hypocritical call for public comment. We weren't here to comment because even though you saw us and heard us on Wednesday, you didn't have the courtesy to tell us you would discuss this on Thursday. This appears to be an evasion of full public participation as required under the Coastal Act. I call for this approach to be on a future agenda so that the public can have input on the process. When? Before six huge projects are finalized. Mother's Beach, two wing, five-story residence hotels for people outside the county, the huge Zucker project on Palawan, the retirement home, which will further block mountain views and bring in a lot of traffic to Admiralty, Boat Central and two new boat storage projects, the one that Nancy was referring to, brand new, and this will take the small boats off the water. In the heart of a residential community, a 19-story hotel and five-story parking structure, as well as 400 new apartments. This is the only project that the EIR is out for. We will hear it in August. Think about what you're doing. The county favors these developments, and this approach will give them exactly what they want without public consideration and public planning for the 10,000 people, residents, boaters, merchants of Marina Del Rey. This year, credit is hard to come by. Esprit is failing. There is time for a master plan. We don't want LCP amendments or entitlements without master community planning. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. And once more, I'll call for John. Oh, you're here. Good.
I might just note, Ms. Shapiro, I did mention the fact we were going to talk about this on Thursday, on Wednesday. I brought it up. I said, just for the benefit of those folks in the audience, Jack was going to go over the outline of our approach. And I did mention that on Wednesday. I said it. It's on the record. So I can't help it if you can't.
But you are going to meet with people following the meeting.
Yeah.
So that creates an opportunity to make sure everybody heard that. Now there's an opportunity to meet with staff following this meeting. John, want to go ahead?
Good morning, Madam Chair. Good morning, Commissioners. Good morning, staff. My name is John Nahas. I want to first say that we really appreciate everything that you guys do and just sitting there and listening to our community and trying to really bring about a change in what's happening into Marina Del Rey. We thought in January you spoke very clearly on behalf of our community. We heard commissioners really kind of reiterate just how they heard the angst of our community. And unanimously, all of those decisions, you know, came to be. This special place that you're now sitting in has a very, very distinctive past history. Your vice chairman, unfortunately, who's no longer here, stated it was operated as a fiefdom, and that his wife was crucified because she came in on behalf of the public. She was trying to bring about a change here in Marina Del Rey. Several politicians have been put in jail. One of your very own coastal commissioners, you know, for shady things that have been happening here in Marina Del Rey. It continues to happen. Yesterday, something I have to bring to your attention, I was told to tell Peter Douglas, but I'm going to tell the commission, I'm going to tell the people of California, that since we know that it's being televised. Jack Ainsworth disrespected our community, and I'm not going to say exactly what happened, but I understand that your staffs work together, and we encourage your staff in Los Angeles County in working together. What we don't want to see or what we don't want to happen is to have a laughter or a session of smiling and laughter at the expense of our community when this community is being silenced. You've heard it several times, and it seems that one of your staff members thinks it's funny. I don't think it's funny. I hope you don't think it's funny. This LCP update is crucial. We have been asking for a master plan, and the county says, no, you're not going to get a master plan, and the LCP is your master plan. We know that LCP, we've heard several people say how rotten this LCP, including Peter Douglas yesterday saying the LCP is not great. I think you said poor or bad. I'm not sure exactly what your comments were. We know it's bad. We want, and regardless of what the financial situation of the county is, the document has to be changed. A comprehensive LCP update needs to happen. Again, we really appreciate what you do here. Have a very safe trip home.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, John. And that's the end of our public comments. Mr. Douglas?
Madam Chair, I just want to make a comment. I don't think it helps your case to attack individual staff members, and I'm not going to sit here and tolerate that. Jack is one of the most dedicated public servants that I know, and if there's anything, we're bending over backwards to try to be transparent about what it is we're doing, to meet with the community. We also have a responsibility to meet with the county. We're trying to work with them. We're dealing with a deck of cards that we've been dealt. We don't think the LCP for Marina Del Rey is a good LCP, but we can't force a change. So we'll meet with you, but I would ask you, to leave the allegations of corruption and bribery at home. I think that didn't come from you, I know, but those are not helpful to our effort to try to sit down and work with you in a civil way to discuss what the best way to proceed is. So I just felt I needed to say that, Madam Chair.
Do you know what happened yesterday?
Okay, John. Commissioner Juan also had a comment. Commissioner Juan?
Yeah, it is not in your interest to go around attacking our staff. And if you interpreted something in the way in which you did, frankly, I think you misinterpreted it. So I think you need to be careful. Our staff would like to do the right thing here, and I think you need to work with them in a cooperative way.
All right. Any other comments from commissioners or staff? Then we are adjourned, and we'll see you next month in July.